watch any of those television programs that go behind the scenes and show you what's happening. I think there might be one called Border Force. And we can watch people coming in, having their bags searched. We can watch people who stupidly say they haven't got anything, getting caught with something. But the real attraction is we see what's happening with our money. Prior to these sorts of programs, if you went up to the counter, say at customs or immigration, you just saw a person who looked at your passport and that's all you knew. Now we know more, and I think we're happier because of that. Operational transparency, letting people see what you do, is a good thing. Years and years ago, when I was Minister for Justice and, in the end, Customs, I had responsibility for the Australian Federal Police. And I can remember saying to them, the reason you're not getting any more money is nobody knows what you're doing. We're going to have to start telling the Prime Minister and the world what you do. And you know what? People are happy to pay more money when they know what's happening. So I'm pleased to see that Ryan Buell, an associate professor at Harvard Business School, understands and is happy to talk to us about operational transparency. Ryan Buell, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you so much, Amanda. It's great to be here.
Now, what made you think, I'm going to do this? One of my favourite questions. People write interesting articles. They follow interesting lines of thought. But one of the really interesting things to me is what made them do that?
So I've been doing this research on operational transparency now with colleagues for more than a decade here at Harvard. But going back to the very beginning, it was actually this really unsettling feeling. Going back to being in grad school, I had this idea with a friend to start a business. It was going to be an online publishing business where people would create books for their friends at important moments of their lives. And my friend and I had been building this whole system, this online platform, and we got to the point where we were going to create the first book. He and I had spent maybe 2 weeks uploading pictures and writing stories, and we'd done all of this work to put together the first book. Yeah. And we had gathered around the computer to hit the button to create the first book, and we clicked on it, and it created the book instantly. It was amazing. It was beautiful, and it was devilishly anticlimactic because we were thinking about the customer experience, you know, all the time that we had spent coming up with the right photos, putting together the right pictures. And I knew there was this dizzying complex array of technology that was going on behind the scenes to stitch the book together. But we thought, gosh, this was really dissatisfying that, you know, here we put in all this effort. And this company that we were building seemed like it put in no effort. And so our solution to the problem was you click the button and it put up a message and it said, we're now putting the book together. We'll email you in 10 minutes when we've got it done. Here's all the stuff that we're doing for you. And we went through that experience and we thought, gosh, that feels strangely better. But it never sat well with me because every service, right, we would think it should be as cheap as possible, as high quality as possible, as fast as possible. That should be what we're looking for. But the idea was that, my goodness, if we try and make it too fast, we try and make it too cheap, we try and make it too easy, and people don't see what's going on behind the scenes, they may not appreciate and value the service as much. And so that nagged at me. And when I joined the PhD program, I started thinking about it more from a research perspective. And we've come to understand that seeing what's going on behind the scenes can make a real difference in how people understand and appreciate the value that's being created.
Well, I wonder if hospitals could manage that. As you rightly point out in your article, a lot of diagnoses come from pathology tests that are done or from scans, for example, that are done. Now, if you're the patient, you get to see the scan being done because you're there. But with the pathology, someone just comes and takes a swab or some blood and off they go down into the bowels of the building, or for all you know, it gets sent across the other side of town. And then someone comes back and says, well, you've got this problem or you don't have that problem. How could you fix that?
So it's absolutely true, right? I mean, think about being a patient. When tests are being run, you're sitting there and you're in the bed, you have no idea what's going on. One of the hospitals here in Boston actually separates the pathology department from the rest of the hospital by a pneumatic tube system. So the people that are actually running the tests aren't even near the patients. So the patients have no idea what's going on. The folks down in pathology, it turns out they never see the patients whose lives they're saving with the work that they're doing. And so you could fix this problem, I think, pretty simply. And one way you could fix it would be to let people from the pathology lab come back up from the basement and actually talk to the patients, or let the patients see what's going on behind the scenes. a video that shows them this is what's going on, or giving them a chance when they're up and around to take a tour of the lab. I mean, people sitting in a hospital to the extent that they're ambulatory might appreciate having a chance to look around, but also get a sense of what's going on in service of their care. There are so many service examples in our world where people are separated from the work that's being done behind the scenes to create value for them. That makes them appreciate and value services less. But for the people that are doing the work, if they can't see the people they're helping, that their efforts are actually serving, the work that they're doing feels less appreciated and less meaningful, which can undermine their motivation as well. So there are real losses on both sides.
Now, look, I'm a bit of a cynic, I have to say, because you use an example of a Boston local government that's got a smartphone app where people can load up a photo they've taken of a pothole that needs fixing or something, and then they can send that off. And presumably they can then see later what's happened when it's fixed. But what if the people behind the scenes on the smartphone app only load ones up when they've actually fixed the problem? In other words, there might be a bucket of problems that have been sent in that haven't been fixed. Is there an opportunity for that, for people to cheat on transparency, in other words?
So absolutely, there's an opportunity for people to cheat on transparency. This is a very, very risky place for an organization to go, because the reality is that although it's the case that when people can see the behind the scenes work that's going on to serve them, they'll appreciate and value the service more. If consumers start to feel like they've been caught up in a manipulation attempt, it can be worse than unhelpful, right? It can really find the trust in the relationship. And so it's certainly the case. And in fact, some of our early research, when we were just running experiments, we were showing people animated graphics of work that was going on, but it wasn't actual work that was going on. We're just saying, imagine you're in this situation. And even imagining you're in the situation, you perceive more value as being created for you. But it's a really slippery slope, I think, between kind of the labor illusion, right? The illusion that work is being done, and genuine work and actually being transparent. And we found, as we've done more and more research, that actually showing the real work is where the real magic takes place.
Yeah. I'm talking with Ryan Buell, Associate Professor at Harvard Business School, about transparency. You know, what goes on when the pathologist is doing the test? What goes on when your pizza's being made? Transparency, very important. We talked about the example of pathology, but you've got a good example where you worked with some people in a hospital in India. And I'm not sure that it's particularly transparency, but people who had shared appointments, yes, they could see what the doctor was doing with another person, so they got to, in a sense, imagine what's happening with themselves when things are happening. But why would shared appointments make you happier with a medical experience?
Yeah, so this is research that I've done with Kamalini Ramdas and Nazli Sonmez at London Business School. And one of the things that really drew us to this area was, if you think about a place where most people would say, I don't want transparency, it's in my one-on-one appointment with my doctor. But this hospital in India, Aravind Eye Hospital in Pondicherry, India, was looking at how can they improve the efficiency of care and the quality of care. And one of the ideas that they came up with was, what if we bring in patients together? So instead of being one-on-one with your doctor when you're going through coma care, you come in and you're there with three or four other patients. Now you might say, well, that's terrible. But imagine the alternative, right? So when you're having your eyes examined, you can't see anything that's going on. You can hear what the doctor is saying to you, but you don't get a chance to see what's going on. The moment that you're in a shared medical appointment, you can actually see on a screen what the doctor is seeing and talking about when the doctor is looking into the eyes of other people. But it goes beyond that too, because if one patient asks a question, then you get to hear that question and you get to hear the answer. And that might make you think of another question, right? And so it gives you transparency into the experiences of other people. You don't feel so alone in your condition. Moreover, when people ask a question, it's balancing, it's leveling in a way. It gives people permission to ask their questions. And so we find that once one person asks a question in a shared medical appointment, everyone else is far more likely now to engage and ask a question. And so we find a number of things. One thing we find is that people report that they're more satisfied with these experiences, these shared appointments, versus people that have one-on-one appointments. The other thing, though, that we find is that people learn more. So we test them afterwards about their condition. People that have been in a shared medical appointment actually learn more from the experience. And it goes beyond that, too, because we're finding now that they become even more engaged in their own treatment. So they're more likely, for example, to take the eye drops that are prescribed to them if they're in shared medical appointments versus if they're in one-on-one appointments. So thinking about where we can introduce transparency, even in places where maybe privacy would be our default stance, I think holds real promise for us to fundamentally change the way humans interact with one another in these contexts.
Yeah. The example I liked, I think, the most is the cleaners on the trains in Japan who had, up until this intervention, worn pale blue uniforms which sort of meshed in with the pale blue of the seats, and that meant no one really noticed what they did. But tell us what happened then.
Yeah, so this, I think, is a really interesting story. This is a company called Tesei, which cleans the bullet trains in Japan. And what you have to understand about the bullet trains in Japan is this is an incredibly precise operation. These are trains that are traveling at 320 kilometers an hour, sometimes on the same rails within 3 minutes of each other. And in 2003, the average train was within 6 seconds of schedule. And they've never had an accident on the Shinkansen system where someone's been injured. And this all comes down to this delicate ballet. Tesei, they have 7 minutes to clean the trains. The trains are in the station for 12 minutes, takes 3 minutes for passengers to get off the train, 2 minutes for passengers to get on, and it takes 7 minutes to get the job done. So 7 minutes for a team of 22 people to clean 1,000 seats. So it's like cleaning 6 Boeing 737s in less than half the time it typically takes to clean one. But Tesei's struggling in 2005 to get this job done. This job was considered a dirty, difficult, dangerous job in Japan. It was a job that people didn't want to do. And in fact, it was a job that was looked down upon. And in fact, they had designed the job to be invisible. As you mentioned, people wore pale blue uniforms, which blended in with the body of the train. But a new leader came in, and one of the changes he made, and it may sound really subtle, is he changed the color of their uniforms to bright red. And all of a sudden now, people could see the work that was going on behind the scenes. Their job was designed now to stand out. And if you watch 22 people cleaning 1,000 seats in 7 minutes, it looks like performance art, right? You see this dizzying array of activity cycling through the train. And all of a sudden, he also gave them permission now to talk to the passengers, which they never had before. And if you see all the work that's going on and you appreciate the work, you're much more inclined to say thank you. And it strikes up this very human dynamic where once I feel appreciated for the work that I'm doing, I'm more engaged in the work I'm doing. I want to work harder. I want to do a better job. And it actually revitalized the performance of this operation. They went from really struggling to get the job done to being able to surface new ideas for how they could improve their processes even further. Customers themselves started to get engaged in some of this work, cleaning up the trains, making them cleaner. And it fundamentally shifted the dynamic. It just makes me think, you know, how many times do we go through the world and we don't see and appreciate the people that are doing things, making real differences in our lives? Sometimes, you know, we're physically separated from them. Sometimes they're right in front of us, but we're stuck in our own minds. We're doing our own thing. You know, what are we losing out on, both operationally, but also societally when that happens?
Yeah. There's another two examples that come together. One is the college kids ordering their meals and getting passed something through a window, and the chefs are out in the big dining kitchen making all the stuff up, and equally at Domino's. And when through technology, people could see their food being made and could indicate whether they liked it or not, with the like light comes on in Domino's out the back, that gives people more satisfaction. And when the chef's out the back in a college dining hall can see who they're preparing food for, and vice versa, the positive feelings on both sides, both the worker and the customer, improve. That's got to be a good thing.
That's absolutely right. And so what we found in these experiments and in other work as well is that when customers can see the hidden work that's going on behind the scenes, they perceive more effort went into serving them, they appreciate the effort, and they value the service more. And when people who are doing the work can see the people that they're helping, the job feels more appreciated, the work feels more important and meaningful, and that makes them more satisfied with their job and willing to exert more effort. So there's this positive feedback loop that happens when we provide transparency, windows both into and out of the process, so that the people who are doing the work and the people who are benefiting from it can see and appreciate one another. And it can make a fundamental difference.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to go into the risks of transparency. I mean, obviously, if you've got a dirty kitchen, you're in trouble. And if you're not doing an effective job, you're in trouble. I get all that. But the one example I do want to focus on is Mickey Mouse at Disneyland when it's 95 degrees outside. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I think there are lots of examples when we might be hesitant to be transparent. And there are some times when being transparent is going to destroy the magic. And I think one example for me was Disney World, where obviously the characters are coming around, they're delighting children. You can imagine that it would be quite traumatic, right, if they ruined the magic show by taking off the character head. So Disney works very, very hard to not have transparency, right, to make it so that when a cast member needs to take a break, they do so behind the scenes so as not to spoil the magic. But that doesn't mean that Disney doesn't even find value in letting people see behind the scenes. In fact, they even have a behind the scenes, behind the magic tour for people who are so inclined, who want to see how the magic is created. But they understand that they don't want to destroy that fantasy for everyone.
Excellent. Ryan Buell, Associate Professor at Harvard Business School, thanks very much for giving us a transparent look at transparency.
Thank you so much, Amanda. It's been my pleasure.